This is Carl the Jackal Frampton.
Hi, this is David Healy.
Hello, this is Stephen Ferris.
Hi, I'm Bethany Ferris.
My name is Shola Amiobi.
I'm Jonas Gutierrez.
Hi, this is Harry Kuehl.
You're listening to The Score. Score.
The Score with Michael Clark. I'm a man.
Welcome along to The Score with me, Michael Clark. Here's what's coming up on this week's programme. It is a packed show, I am telling you. After the dramatic turn of events that played out on Tuesday night, Lorne could now be described as having one hand on the Gibson Cup. 1 point is all they need when they head to Windsor Park on Monday. Can they get the job done and retain the title? Joining us from the Inverman shortly will be their in-form frontman Andy Ryan. Whilst in the Championship, a win over Dundella will see Portadown crowned champions and will seal automatic promotion with Newry City heading the other way. At Brandywell, however, it's fourth against second in the table, Institute versus Bangor, in a huge clash that will have consequences on both of their promotion hopes. Joining us from Stute, the towering centre-half at Institute, Sean Leppard. And, as if that wasn't enough, on Wednesday I was at Titanic Belfast to find out who Northern Ireland's men's under-19s would be playing this summer in the 2024 UEFA European Under-19 Championship Finals. It's going to be staged at Seaview, Inver Park and Windsor Park. And whilst I was there, I caught up with the under-19s boss Gareth McCauley, the senior men's manager Michael O'Neill, and tournament ambassador Stuart Dallas. I told you, what a show. It is all coming up right here on The Score.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Yes, welcome along to the programme. Great to have you with us for another week. And we are starting, where else could you start, with the Premiership. Lorne top, 3 points clear after the most dramatic end to proceedings in their game and Linfield's game on Tuesday night. Talk about changing the complexion of things before Lorne and Linfield face off on Monday. Joining us from the Invermen is Andy Ryan. Andy, welcome back onto the programme.
Cheers, mate. Cheers for having me.
How much has the last few days improved your mood?
Yeah, you could say that. You know, Tuesday night it was a, even though it was a crazy game, it was a maybe a crazy 10 seconds, if you like, near the end. So, yeah, it was crazy, all right.
When did you realise that you hadn't just scored late on to win your match, but also Linfield had been pegged back?
I think it was at the side of the pitch. When we equalised, obviously, emotions got the better of us at the side of the pitch. You know, and then the celebrations kind of calmed down a wee bit. That's when kind of news started filter through that Corian had decoyed.
And that can only just make everything all the sweeter. What were the scenes like? I wasn't at the ground, I was down in Newry, so was that one of those moments where everyone likes to say, you know, we'll keep our heads, nothing's won yet, but actually you just get a bit giddy and go mental?
Yeah, obviously I think the emotions was nothing to do with what happened at Windsor. I think it was more, you know, the 95th minute winner that we had got, because we knew going into these last few games that, you know, it was kind of still in our hands. We had to win all the games that we've got remaining. So I think it was more so that, you know, and after the game it was, the mood was high, but, you know, it was kind of quickly come back down to earth, 2 feet in the ground and start to focus on what we've got ahead next.
And it makes for, obviously, a fascinating watch for everybody, but for Lorne now, a draw against Linfield and you keep your title, from maybe how you felt walking off the pitch only very recently against Crusaders to where you are now, it does show you that you know, you can never give up, because there's always that chance to get back into it, and you've more than done that.
Yeah, well, I think I said that in one of my interviews recently. I think that's one of our biggest strengths is our mentality. You know, think we've not had many setbacks this year, but the small setbacks that we have had, I think that we've come back strong and really made a statement. So, you know, the message after the Crusaders game was just, you know, remain calm. It was a wee blip and, you know, get back to what we're good at. And I think we've done that since then.
It does show you the challenge that is put up to teams in the league, you know, to go and win the league and you lose what is ultimately your second league defeat of the entire season. And people are talking about, whoa, it's over now, they've blown it, or this or that, or they're not favourites anymore. After a second defeat of the season, you don't get that in too many leagues.
No, I don't think you would. But, you know, that's kind of all the outside noise. You know, we just try and remain focused in camp and focus on what we're trying to do. But, you know, I think it can only be good for the league, you know, tight at the top, going into the last couple of games. So, I think it should be. It's good for neutrals and an outside view looking in.
And I'm just curious as to, you know, you talk about the mentality and the sort of strength in the group. You obviously have the belief of last season and winning the league and all that will naturally do to help you believe that, you know, you can go and do it again. But looking at it, you know, you have the Irish Cup semi-final defeat and then so close after that, the Crusaders game. It must have been in your head somewhere like, okay, we need to tweak something, things aren't just quite going how we're used to.
To be completely honest with you, that wasn't the case. You know, as I just said, you know, we kind of sat down and spoke as a group and it was just about getting back to what we're good at, you know, and what has worked so far this season. So I think that was the biggest thing, you know, just get back to what we're good at, refocus and regroup, don't lose any faith and kind of just keep going, like, if you like.
And going into that next game against Cliftonville, I mean, Cliftonville, you know, I think we're worthy winners of the Irish Cup semi-final. Don't think there's any debate there. But you go into the next game, you're so assured you win at Solitude. And then even after the Crusaders defeat, when Cliftonville come again to Inver Park and you're all sick of looking at each other, you put 8 past them in one of the most clinical performances anyone would have seen. So, you know, that to me, it obviously speaks volumes about what you guys are about, but you could have so easily, playing Cliftonville after that semi-final, let your heads drop and think, oh, this team seemed to have our number or anything like that, but it was far from it.
Yeah, you know, obviously the Cup semi-final is a big disappointment. I don't think we showed up on the day as a group. You know, that was the disappointing thing. You know, I know all credit to Cliftonville, they were good on the day and deserved to get through to the final, but you know, we knew going into that Tuesday night that you know, there'd be a few whispers and groans and moans, but we knew that if we went into that game and played to our best that we could get a result from there.
And that first league win of the two most recent ones against them, I noticed that Northern Ireland statman Marshall Gillespie's given you both goals in that game. Some sources are still disputing that, and this is important stuff, everybody, because in the race for the golden boot, Marshall has you level. Some places, because it's all comps, some places have Lee Bonus 1 ahead of you here, so you might need a wee extra goal somewhere in there, Andy, just to nudge in front to make sure.
Yeah, look, you know, they're all kind of personal achievements, but, you know, I said that on Saturday. We'll look at that once the season's done. You know, the most important thing is that, you know, we Ian Lee and all the rest of the boys keep trying to chip in with goals, and, you know, and we'll look at all that personal stuff once the season's done.
Has the season taken its toll? I mean, how would you compare it to last year? Is there any similarities in terms of how you're feeling, or is it just totally different?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, obviously last year I only came in January, so I only kind of had half a season, if you like. You know, and this season, don't get me wrong, it's been long and tough and there's been twists and turns along the way, you know, but, you know, there's two games to go, and we'll regroup and we'll prepare as best we can for the two games.
And looking at the players that you've had alongside you, this group, you know, it feels like even when there's been injuries and problems defensively, you've had the personnel to step in. You know, Phil Levi Ives has been so unfortunate with his injury recently, but there's other examples of that. Sean Want, obviously a good friend of yours as well, another example of it. But the fact that it seems to be no matter what's going on, there's someone to step in Because it's not easy to step into the breach in a team with such high expectations, but it seems that you have the personnel to do that.
Yeah, I think that's huge credit to the club. I think we've built a really, really good squad here. You know, and as you just said there, once people are maybe struggling for a wee bit of form or injury or whatever it may be, we've got somebody ready to step in. And I think that's due to the levels that we have in training every single day. Everybody's pushing each other to the max. There's nobody having days off. So once they're ready to be called upon, they're ready to go and step in.
And what you get a feeling of when you come down to, well, I still call it the Cliff, but the Larne Academy of Sport, is it's like a mini village, really, isn't it now? There's so much going on. You've all the young ones, the scholars, running around, and they've had great success recently in the Harry Cavan final. Just as players, as senior players, is that something you get involved in and try and have words with the younger lads and you know, congratulate them and try and show them, you know, this is your pathway, ultimately, you know, come and see if you're good enough one day?
Yeah, I think it's all about the experienced players trying to set examples. You know, whether that be small chat or leading by example around the place or you're training or you're playing the game on Saturday. I think it's all about trying to set examples for them, and hopefully they can watch us and see the success we had last year, and hopefully try and learn for that and strive to where they want to go.
It's a point that, you know, could easily be overlooked, but when we use the word like culture in football, it can sound a bit pretentious. However, you do get the feeling when you come down to that facility, everybody says hello, everybody's holding doors for people. They try, I'm saying they as if you're not part of it, but you know, you all try to make it welcoming when people come in. And I don't know, does anyone sit down and say, this is our ethos, this is what we do, this is what you must do? Or does that just naturally rub off on one another? But to me, it's so impressive, because it's, it just shows a bit of professionalism. And for young players to see it and have the chance to be so close to you guys, naturally must benefit them.
No, I think that's just one of the things that comes naturally to that group. You know, we are a close-knit group. You can see that on the pitch, but it's just as much off the pitch. You know, everybody gets along and talks to each other, sits at with each other at lunch, and, you know, we are a close-knit group. And I think that's one of the gaffer's biggest traits when he tries to bring something new to the club. They have to fit the culture. You know, and everybody we bring into that building, they have to really do it on the pitch, but it's off the pitch. We need good players, good characters in about the place and fit right into the group.
And I'm sure you've friends and family thinking, we've lost Andy to Larne now. That's him. He's just he's a Larne resident.
Hi, well, you know, I've still got another 2 years here, so it's tough being away from your family. You know, it's the sacrifices sometimes you have to make in this job, and it is a tough one, you know, but you know, you get moments like last year that kind of make it worth it.
Yeah, well, they must be having something to show for it. And given how the last few weeks have been, to put yourself back in that position again, just how sweet would it be to win the league? As you say, last year you came in and everyone put a lot of credit behind you, and fairly so, for the impact you made in January. But to have been there from the beginning this year, it must make it even nicer if you were to win it.
Yeah, look, obviously that is ultimately the end goal, you know. But, you know, I've got a difficult game in Monday night, you know, after the disappointment of Tuesday night with Linfield. You know, they'll be coming out and trying to make a real statement against us. So, you know, we know it's not going to be easy. We'll need to be at our very, very best to try and get anything from that game. So, no, it should be a good game, hopefully.
And just for anyone who isn't aware, it's 3 points, but Larne also have a vastly superior goal difference of plus 17 at this moment in time over Linfield. So, even if Linfield were to win, they would need to perform better than you in the last game. They would need to hope you slip up against Coleraine. And looking at how Coleraine have been performing lately, you don't really want it to go down to that last game either, do you? Because, you know, get it done as soon as you can. So what are you expecting from Linfield? The wounded beast is the old football cliche, but I suppose there's a bit of that.
Yeah, look, obviously Linfield are a very good side. You know, they are where they are for a reason, up near the top of the table, because they are a good side. You know, when we're going to their home patch, they'll be out to try and make a statement after all night in front of their home fans. So, you know, we know it's going to be a difficult night, but we'll be prepared, and hopefully we can go there and try and get something from the game.
Have you any feeling about playing matches at Windsor Park? I know obviously you got a win there in November. It's not always been a happy hunting ground in recent years, obviously historically, but even in the head-to-heads, the home games, the home team tends to have a wee bit of an edge. You do sense between these sides?
Yeah, well, you could look at that in any game. You know, sometimes home teams do have the advantage. You know, in Linfield are at home and they'll be coming out looking to make a statement. So it's up to us to go there and try and get something from that game.
And just finally, when the running is as intense as it has been, do they give you any sort of reprieve in training? You know, for us mere mortals trying to understand what you guys are going through, do they say you can have a session off this morning, have a lie in, boys, well done, have a bacon sarnie, go ahead, or do they just work you because you're nearly there?
No, as I said, nothing's done yet. You know what I mean? So you're still preparing as we would do if it's middle of the season, working hard in the gym, training hard on the pitch. So now we'll have no off days. We'll try and maintain the levels that we have done, fitness-wise and sharpness-wise, and be at our very, very best, hopefully.
Okay, well, it's an interesting insight into it, because people wonder about that full-time model, but in terms of Larne, are you physically in every single day then? You know, what I'm just trying to imagine, what is your schedule like? How much of it do they, you know, lay out for you as such, Andy?
We're in kind of most days. We'll work 4 days up to a game, so we're in 4 days straight before a game. And you know, it's all hands on deck, it's hard work. With a lot of tactical stuff in there as well, so you know, it's constantly trying to put pictures in your head of the opposition that we're playing on Saturday. A lot of analysis work as well off the pitch. So, yeah, there's a lot of hours that go on the pitch and off the pitch.
And the thing that I never realised with video analysis, and it might not apply to Larne, but a lot of them will go and get the TV footage, which gives me just a great sense of anxiety when someone listens back to me saying he should have scored that, or how did that happen. Please tell me if they do take it off the telly that they at least mute me.
Oh, that's one thing we make sure. If it's you, Michael, it's always muted.
Hey, there he is. He shoots, he scores again. That was a tap in. Nearly as many assists as Lee Bonus this season, I think, on that sort of form. Here, speaking of your teammates, Tomás Cosgrove in Team of the Year. Every year I feel like people are going, how's he missed out again? He's finally got his place in it, and he deserves his place in it as well. By the way, it's voted for by the clubs and the journalists, so it's not a case of a sympathy vote for Tomás before somebody sends me a stupid message. He's in there by merit, but is he bouncing about the place now going, you know, finally, or what's he like?
I was in this morning, I was wondering why I was smiling like a Cheshire cat. To be fair to Tomás, he's been excellent for us this season. Not only has he been a great member off the pitch, it's on the pitch as well. You know, he's played in a number of positions this season with no groans. He's just filled right in there, and you know, he's been a great member of our squad this season.
And you are in the Premiership Team of the Year, and we can say now, as people listen to this on Friday, you're also shortlisted for Player of the Year. I'm not sure if that news had filtered through to you yet, Andy. Your thoughts?
No, I didn't know that. To be fair, that's the first I've heard of that. You know, it's obviously good to be recognised by your fellow, is it voted by your players?
It's from the managers and it's from the journalists.
Oh, well, there you go. You know, it's opposition managers that you come up against week in, week out. So, obviously, it's great for that side to be recognised.
Just to let you know who you're up against then, it's Kyle McLean and Rory Hale. So, you're in very, very good company. But just thought, if you hadn't seen that yet, you'd like to know, because it's a grand achievement. I hope you're going to be there wearing your dicky bow on Saturday night.
I'm sure I will be on Saturday night. I'm sure I will be fitted and booted.
Very good, and don't worry, Larne fans, he'll be on the fizzy drinks only, or maybe a glass of water if Kenny Bruce is listening. Sorry, they're athletes. Andy, great to have you on the programme once again, and congratulations on a fantastic season to date.
Cheers, Michael, thank you, bye bye.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Larne's Andy Ryan there on The Score. The Premiership match is taking place this weekend on Saturday, five games. Ballymena United, who are now confirmed as the side's second bottom in the league, take on the team who can't move off the foot of the table after their defeat on Tuesday against Carrick Rangers, Newry City. Carrick Rangers, they play Loughall. That's where I'm going to be. And it's all about Carrick Rangers trying to nail down seventh, unless Loughall beat them, of course, in which case they would go above them in the table. Cliftonville take on Glentoran. Corrien play Crusaders. And Dungannon Swifts, who themselves have a little eye on that European adventure, could they get closer to that? They play Glenavon at Stangmore Park, with Linfield against Larne, as we know, taking place on Monday.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Now let's get our teeth into the Championship. What an incredible Championship season it has been. Many saying one of the best, if not the best, most dramatic of all time. Look at it, Portadown top of the table as things stand on 70 points. And you go down to 5th place in Annie United, 6 behind them. There's 2 games still to play. Who's going to finish where in between? And this weekend, we've the small matter of not just 1st against 3rd, but 4th hosting 2nd, 1 point between those two sides. Institute are the team in 4th at the moment, but victory could put them right up there in their promotion pursuit. And joining us on the show now, we should start by saying a huge congratulations to him. He's in the Team of the Year. He's been nominated for Championship Player of the Year too. The awards are on Saturday. Sean Leppard, how are you?
Hi, oh, very good, Michael. Cheers. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great to have you on the show. And before we get into all these permutations and all the stress and drama that football induces on us, how nice to have a couple of nominations, personal honours this season. Of course, you've won Championship Player of the Month already in the campaign, so you're doing rightly.
Yeah, it's very good to get the personal accolades and the recognition as well, alongside, you know, in a team sport, you know what I mean? It means you're obviously doing something right. But it's at that stage of the season, you just sort of have to put all that to the back of your mind and concentrate on the games at hand, because that stage of the season where everything's a 6-pointer and they're must win. But the recognition is nice, and it's always something to look back on and say, right, I've been doing something right.
Well, we'll maybe get into your career in a little bit, but I do want to talk about, as you say, this time it is what are we calling them, 2 cup finals really for Institute, starting with this game at Bangor. I mean, it is massive. We're not hyping this up. This is really what it all comes down to.
Yeah, especially for ourselves. I think if we lose at the weekend, though, I think that you can safely say that's also the contention. So it's a must-win for us. I'm sure Bangor are thinking the same. If they won, I think they think they've secured second place. Now, ourselves and Bangor have always had good matches this season, so it'll be one to look forward to, and I'm sure all our teams around the league as well, especially the likes of Dundell and Portadown, will be looking for the result of that too, because it could have a massive effect on them. Bangor, but like ourselves, they're a footballing team, and I think the brand will suit them. The extra space, they're athletic, they have runners, you know what I mean? So it'll be interesting. I think it'll be a good matchup.
And the team who have been a little bit of a dark horse in terms of how they've turned things around since January is Annie United. You and your teammates on the wrong side of a result against them. Has that dampened spirits at all, or how do you intend to bounce back from that result last weekend?
It obviously put a wee bit of a dent in the momentum. I think we were on a great run ourselves just before the Anna game. Now, we were fully aware of what Anna were going to bring to the Brandywell and the physicality of the side. So I think they were on a great run. So we just knew form was on their side more than anything, as I'm sure most teams in the league are aware. But no, I think this week, I think we sort of took a step back and stripped it back. We've been honest with ourselves, I think. We had conversations between ourselves, and we said we need to take more ownership just in game management. And even in the first half, I think we need to do better taking chances, get off to a better start. So we're going to be a completely different game plan now against Bangor. They're 2 different teams, so you can't really take things in from last week into this week. Otherwise, you'll be very predictable. So I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully we can get a result.
And naturally, Institute fans are wondering, will you be fit? I hate to sort of nearly put a jinx on players, but I'm sure you're hoping so.
I'm going to do everything I can, so I don't want to put a jinx on it myself either, but come down to the stage of the season now, it's like, if it was earlier in the season and you were struggling, you'd nearly just sit back and let yourself recover. But it's at the stage of the season now where it's like, you've two games left, you've played 30 odd, so I'll see what I can do. I don't want to put a label on anything yet, but I'll be doing everything I can through training and through rehab and physio, but I think it's looking good for Saturday.
Well, that's exciting news for Institute fans, and the battle against Bangor's forwards. They've been such an imposing team, haven't they? And you know, Ben Arthur's naturally gets a lot of attention. They've scored 76 goals, which is the standard bearer in the division. But when you look at it, you've got that mean defensive record. Only 42 conceded that other defences are looking at. Mind you, they're only 43 conceded. So I'm trying to basically get towards here, Sean. Are we going for high scoring or low scoring? What sort of game am I anticipating in this one?
Me, myself, I prefer a low scoring game. You never know. Like, Bangor, they score goals for fun, and we know that. We're aware of the threat Arthur's and MacArthur's and behind them, because, you know what I mean, they're a great partnership, and I think everybody around the league appreciates that. You know what I mean? I think that's why MacArthur's has been nominated as well for Player of the Year, and it's rightfully earned. Our defence, I personally feel like we do have the best defence in the league, but you have to be aware of Bangor, they're not too bad themselves. Like, you know what I mean, their record speaks themselves. They've only conceded 43 now. In past seasons that would have been perfect, but I think we've just put them at the post now. It could all change within one game, you know what I mean? So they scored two, that's it, they take both records. So we'll be doing everything we can to protect that defensive record. I think we have 15 clean sheets or 14, so I think as a defensive unit, that's the way we look at it. Now the strikers obviously look at it different, they'll be looking to bump their numbers up, but if I had to put a label on it, I prefer a low scoring game myself.
Spoken like any defender would. And I'm interested in that. Is that something that Kevin Deary set out early doors? Like, if we defend well, if we make it hard for other teams to score, naturally you have a better chance of winning games. Or when in the season do you think that really kicked in about, you know, you shall not pass?
I think it's just been sort of put it, it's always been bred into teams, but I think it's really been a staple since pre-season. Kevin's always stated that, look, basically if you don't concede, you have a better opportunity of winning the game, like, you know what I mean? And I think even looking back to the old Institute team that got promoted, and chatting to a couple of fellows that were on that team, they said they won most of their games just by 1-0, do you know what I mean, or just by one goal. So obviously everybody says that defence can win a league, but you still need your goal scorers at the other end to convert the chances to win the league. So look, I think we have a good balance here at the minute, and I think the signings that we made and securing players for next season as well, that's been a good staple. And I think defensively, I think we have a solid unit, especially with the signing of Danny as well, great experience. So I think Kevin really has put that emphasis on the fact that the defence does matter as much as the attack. So that's a nice change, because normally you see attack getting all the praise and all the attention, do you know what I mean? So it's them wee fine points that make the difference. And look, we pride ourselves on our defence, but we know we can't just go on out at the weekend and sit down, because realistically they won the two games, we have to outscore them.
And the way it has ended up being so, so tight for places, it feels cruel that any team from the top five are going to end up finishing fifth, nearly, in how this has worked out, because there are people that might have a couple of weeks ago been first or second or third could all of a sudden find themselves pulled down, teams could jump up. We know how much it can chop and change. Just what is that like to play in and know that it is so changeable, and no matter how hard you work, there is actually no guarantees unless you win your matches?
Yeah, that's all you can really do. You can only really focus on yourselves and hope that all the results go your way. I wouldn't really call it pressure, it's more of excitement now. This year, last year was pressure when you're sort of scrapping at the bottom, and I'm sure other teams will agree with me. You'd be looking forward to the Saturday and you'd be excited to go out and perform, do you know what I mean? So I think, as far as I can remember, this is the closest the championship has ever been, and normally you have an outright runaway leader. You can tell who's going to win the league by Christmas, but the league's constantly changing. I think we've had three or four different teams in first position since Christmas. But I think that's, it's great for the fans, keeps everybody involved, and it sort of keeps the cart in front of the donkey that every team keeps performing and there's upsets every week. So that's exciting, and there's a bit of pressure involved, but it's excitement more than anything.
And the game after the Bangor game is against Portadown, who I would think you're hoping will have already confirmed their promotion by then, and you just go out and focus on your things. People have been talking about the permutations of, you know, how does that impact things?
Yeah, it's sort of just a spanner in the works, you know what I mean? But I feel like if we take care of our own business, if we won this week and we get a result next week, away to Portadown, which will be difficult. You can only really hope for the best. You can only really look up. So there's that many scenarios that could play out. It's impossible to think about them all. But our main focus is just focus on ourselves, and all you can really do is hope for all the results to go your way. There's no point worrying about something that you can't influence. So we can only really influence ourselves and how we handle our own business, and look back then at the end of the season with no regrets, really, that what if we could have done this. All we can really do is do what we can, and if we try our hardest and it's not good enough, you can hold your hands up, we've done what we could.
How much have you enjoyed your football this season? I would think that the personal awards tell us all we need to know about how well you've been performing, but in an enjoyment level, can you enjoy the season whilst you're still in it?
Oh, 100%. If you're not enjoying your football, then what's the point? Do you know what I mean? You have to enjoy it along the way, and you have to make memories. Always, it'll tear you apart. It's a ruthless game, so when the going's good, you have to enjoy it. The team this year it's one of the best change rooms I've ever been in, or by far the best. There's plenty of young fellas coming through, and they've all played together at junior football. And I wasn't too sure how well they were going to gel with the rest of the group and the dynamic of the group. But here's OMO, like, away from the training ground as well. We sort of take things in their own hands. But here's OMO really driving that. It's like a family. You know what I mean? So I think I see the team more than my family at the moment. but the lads are great. And it's just made playing with them this season 100 times easier. And it's great to be a part of just.
Well, the enthusiasm is infectious. In terms of, you know, everything that you've been building towards, just what would it mean to you, and what would it mean to Institute to get the club back into the Premiership?
Oh, it would just be the icing on the cake. We're coming into this season, I think we were all realistic. We were never really looking to be anywhere up around this. And even as the season progressed, you were sort of thinking, you were sort of hesitant to comment on it. But if we could go now and get a result and get promotion, or even into the playoff, and give the fans a bit of excitement, something to look forward to, it would be fantastic. And I think they'd all agree it would be a crowning moment to my team at Institute anyways, because the last couple of years have been pretty difficult. The fans haven't really enjoyed it as much as they should have, so it would be nice to give something back to them.
And that's the thing from the other side of it, the Premiership teams, they've been looking at it. We now know that Ballymena United are the side that are second bottom, so they're waiting to see how the Championship finishes, to whether they're required or not for a playoff. It's looking like it's likely. Again, I keep saying as things stand, because you have to. But they will know that no matter who it is that ends up against them in a playoff, if that's what does happen, they're not going to get an easy game because of the calibre in the Championship. And, you know, I really mean that. It's going to be... any side is capable of giving Ballymena a tough game.
Yeah, I think that's a fair opinion. Ballymena, you have to respect them. They are in the Premiership for a reason. They are a good side, but you have to back yourself. You know what I mean? And I think any of the five Championship teams at the moment, on their day, would cause problems for anybody. And I think that was evident in the Cup. Like Portadown, for example, they made it the whole way to the final. But then any of the top five could beat any of the top five, so you never know how it's going to play out. And I think Ballymena will be aware of that, but I'm sure they'll have all their planning, all their research done and stuff like that, so that'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I'm not sure who they'd prefer. It must be a bit of a nightmare, all the planning. Maybe that has to kick in last minute to wait and see after this weekend where things lie, or after Friday, because Friday, of course, is the grand conclusion. And that will be a fascinating day in many ways. I just wonder, does it add a wee bit extra to the spectacle as well? The fact that, you know, Friday night under the lights, or, well, whatever sunlights may be left, since we're meant to have a bit more summery weather, fingers and toes crossed, and all these big games going on, will people have an eye on their mobiles at halftime, full time, people shouting on the latest is from the other game, all that sort of thing? Even just the thought of it is quite exciting.
There's always a different atmosphere playing football at night, whether it be a midweek match on a Tuesday, or even if it is the Friday. The excitement's always different, because your routine changes. Most boys that are working get out of work early, and the plans for meeting up are different, and the routine's different. But Friday night always brings a bit of excitement, and I think it would be a great way to start the weekend if you could get a result. But you never sort of know if it plays into your favour or if it hampers you. So no, it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I personally I love games on a Friday night. Do you know what I mean? So it'll be interesting to find out. But it's too early to comment on anything, because there's just that many teams on contention. It wouldn't be fair to rule anybody out. So, but as far as touching on Bamberton and all our scores at halftime, nah, there'll be none of that. The phones will be turned off an hour beforehand, and that'll be it. Just take care of your own business and go out and do what you can.
It's probably wise. That is one way to shut out some of the noise. I daren't say supporters will quickly tell you what's going on anyway. And just finally, for anyone that doesn't really know your background, can you tell us a wee bit about us? When did you get into the Irish League? Who are your inspirations, and what's your journey been like to this point? Because you're really making a name for yourself, but like any of us, you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, so growing up, I always just played local football around Derry, and then joined Derry's academy under 17s, stayed there for a season and was released. That's when I joined Institute under 18s, and from then I've just sort of progressed through their academy. They have a great setup, and the coaches are great, and they explain it as a stepping stone. They only want to see you progress. So I spent a year with the 18s, 6 months with the 20s, and before you know it, I was training with the first team. And I had a good year or two for my opportunity, and then COVID obviously threw a spanner in the works. So but the last couple of seasons I've been playing consistently, and Institute's a great club. They want to see you progress. They'll always give academy prospects a chance, and all you have to do is keep your head down and work. But it's great to show the fans that the academy is paying off, and it's great to be an example for all our young players around Derry that there is a pathway through, and there is a possibility of progression and stuff like that. So it's great now looking back on it, but at the time it was a lot of hard work, and alright, decisions don't go your way, but you have to stick with it. You know what I mean? You have to take everything with a pinch of salt and just keep your head down, and you have to be confident in your own ability. Do you know what I mean? So there are times that you start to doubt yourself, but you always come through if you put the head down. So it's hard to hear at the time, but I try to explain that to everybody, that look, it hasn't been smooth sailing the whole way, but it's great now that it's working out for me. So I'm very appreciative of everybody at Institute for giving me the opportunity.
Well, you're clearly an old head on young shoulders. What age are you now, Sean? 23?
You're 23 now, yeah.
So, but that experience, it only helps you. And the thing as well, anybody that's successful, apart from a few freaks maybe, have all a similar type story. It's never linear. It's never straightforward. People just see you at your best moment and don't realise the graph that goes in behind. So, and there'll be people relating to this in all different clubs at the moment and thinking and applying it in their own wee ways that they try and push towards whatever their thing is that they're aiming for at the end of this season. But it's been great talking to you, and you've been part of an amazing Institute, part of an amazing story this season, and like everybody, I just can't wait to see how this all plays out in the next week or so, because it has been so dramatic. So fingers crossed you're fit to play in that big game and banger, and best of luck.
Perfect, Michael, cheers, thanks for having me on. Thank you.
There you go. Sean Leppard joining us, the towering centre-half at Institute, nominated for Championship Player of the Year. You'll find out tomorrow if he's only gone and won it, but he'll be hoping his teammates do the business before that.
The Score with Michael Clark.
If you have been waiting patiently to hear from our next guest, the good news is we can do that now, because on Wednesday I went out to Titanic Belfast to enjoy the draw, which I have to say I did enjoy, because it was done very professionally and very quickly, and both those things are appreciated. It didn't drag on. Gareth McCauley's under-19s were drawn in Group A. That's because they're the hosts. And in their group, Italy, Norway and Ukraine. Group B, just to keep things right, is Denmark, Spain, France and Turkey, or Turkey, as we're now instructed to call them. So there you are. They'll be the teams that Northern Ireland might face should they make it out of the group, because the top two teams do that. The Irish FA hosting the competition along with UEFA from the 15th to the 28th of July. And the first man I grabbed for a natter is the senior men's manager, Michael O'Neill. First question to Michael was a simple one. What did he make of the draw?
Well, look, it's always difficult to gauge, I think, underage football, but the fact that there's only like seven teams have qualified, and I know how difficult it is at this age group to qualify, the most difficult age group to qualify with. You have to win your, you have to finish in the top two position of the qualifying, and then you have to finish and win your group at elite level, which is very, very difficult. So it'll be tough, there's no doubt about that. You know, Norway and Ukraine are probably not the powerhouses. You know, if you look at this tournament, we've no Germany, we've no England, for example, we've no Netherlands. So, you know, the fact that Ukraine and Norway in particular have made it here shows that they have strong teams, and Italy will obviously be one of the favourite teams, having won it in recent years as well. So great challenge for Gareth and the boys, but you know, I think he'll have the team extremely well prepared, and I know how hard he's worked at this job, and you know, he's a lot of belief in this squad.
I would expect, given your relationship that you have with one another, you'd offer them a little bit of advice.
Look, we work well. The good thing that I've enjoyed is, you know, we have a good staff with Aaron as technical director, myself as senior manager, Tommy Wright as 21s, Gareth at 19s and 18s, and Andy Waterworth with the academy and 17s. So, like, if we meet, if not monthly, we're meeting every 2 months. So we, all the players are discussed on a regular basis. So yeah, Gareth knows. I think everyone as a staff wants to give him the best chance possible. So any help we can add, but you know, he's played the game at the top level, he knows what he wants, he's very, very thorough as a coach. I've liked how he sets his team up, I like how he presents his information to the players, and he's shown all a lot of signs that he can go far in the game.
And Northern Ireland fans maybe casting their eye over the under-19s a bit closer than they would have done normally. What can you tell us about this group of players? How talented are they?
Well, look, it's harder to gauge because they haven't had to go through a qualification campaign, which is always, you know, they've played friendly games. It's more difficult for me to see the 19s because they play on the same dates that we play. So it's been difficult. 17s are slightly different. But I know, like, obviously, you know, the level that the players play at. I know that some of the players have already made that step up to 21s as well, which I think is important. And I think Gareth has a nice mix. He has some domestic players based in his squad as well. He obviously hasn't finalised the full squad yet. But I think that step, there's no better example to any of our young players is to look at, you know, both Brody Spencer and Callum Marshall, who played for Gareth, you know, in the qualifying campaign for last season's tournament. And obviously now they've been an integral part of our squad in the last 12 months.
And if I could just ask you one question about your team. Summer friendlies lined up. What can you tell us about your preparations ahead of those?
Well, look, we just have to keep an eye on the players between now and obviously when we meet the 8th of June and the game schedule for the 11th of June. It's always a little bit tricky because the players, it depends when their season finishes, and some of the games in England, if they're not involved in playoffs, they'll finish in the first week of May. So we'll probably go out a little bit early to Spain, get some fitness work into the players, and then prepare for the game. It's, you know, you want the players to have an enjoyable experience as well, and I think they'll have that in this trip. It's a great game for us to go to Spain. I like them to play be involved in playoffs, because it means fitness-wise, the whole process is a little bit easier. But we'll have to manage some of the players who maybe their season finishes a little bit early, but they're all keen to play. It's a really good group of players, young group of players, and you know, as I say, another opportunity for us to build on the recent camps.
So no room in the squad for an out of shape 34-year-old centre-back standing opposite, you know?
Well, there's no room for anyone out of shape, to be fair. There's definitely room for a 34 centre-back, but if he's out of shape, no, I'm sorry, but we could do a bit of experience. So as I say, it'd be nice if I can talk Johnny into it as well, but like, as I say, hopefully we'll have that added bit of experience to give, because I think the players need that as well, and we've gone through this campaign a little bit lacking experience in key areas, and so the older players still have obviously a big role to play.
And just to dot the I's and cross the T's, mention of international friendlies there for Michael O'Neill. We know they're playing Spain. Well, 3 days after that, they are set to take on Andorra in Murcia on the 11th of June. Now, bringing our attention back to the under-19s tournament in July, let's hear from their manager, Gareth McCauley, and here's his thoughts on the teams they've been drawn against.
Do you know what? It's good because I can focus on the football now and not all the other stuff around sort of the tournament, and you know, start analysing and looking at you know, how we're gonna compete against the other nations. In terms of the draw, pleasing. You know, we played Italy in September in my first game. Now, we lost at 3-2 away from home, but we'd only had a couple of days. But I think what they took from that there will give the kids a lot of belief and a lot of focus that they can actually perform at the levels required for the tournament. So that was a big plus, really, getting the Italian team, because they'll be able to feel that. And then the other teams, listen, strong opposition. And maybe suit us a little bit better than some of the more you know, technical teams like Spain and that there. Mm-hmm. And you know, speaking to probably all the coaches, Spain was the team that they wanted to avoid. So to do that there was pleasing, yeah.
And how fantastic that you're going to start off against Ukraine. Any experience against them in a major finals?
Yeah, it's quite weird. Yeah, but I suppose, listen, I'll be able to draw not comparisons in any way like that there, but draw from the experiences of that game in terms of motivational things or whatever for the players. You know, that was a game we had to win. As an opening game in this tournament on home soil, our boys will be busting to put on a performance and stuff and that. So we can draw similarities between it, but football's weird sometimes, the way it throws things up.
You're going to just pull that video out when you're saying, now, look, set pieces, this is how we want to go.
No, we're a possession team, we're not a set piece team, but listen, I think if I pulled the video out, the boys would laugh at me with the culture and environment we have and things like that. But a lot of them will know about it, some of them won't know about it, different things like that there. But listen, it's not about me, it's not about that, it's about the players, and it's about their journey. And as like Michael alluded to when he spoke earlier, it's not that big a jump. So if these kids can star, you know, in this tournament, the door's open and the pathways are there to the senior team.
And just tell us a wee bit about the under-19s, you know, what is this group like, and what can fans expect when they come out to these games and watch you in July?
To be fair, we're actually a young squad. Most of the lads have another year under-19s, and most of them will be 06s. I don't know why sort of that is. Well, it's something to do with COVID, I'm not sure, with the 05 group and different stuff. But so we're a young team, but we're a competitive team. We've seen it in the games we've played, and we've been growing, and they're looking forward to it. Like, so they've obviously been watching it, some of them have been watching it because it was streamed, and they've been texting me on the phone here on the way up to speak and stuff. So they're excited about it, and I say the focus is on the football now.
And how are you enjoying your time as a manager? You know, very young manager. What a way to start, really, with this so soon in your career.
Yeah, it's got good bits and bad bits, I think, like anything. It's it can be very consuming. Now, I have a lot of players to look after, and you know, constantly on the go, constantly on the road at games. And I think you, when you do this sort of position, you're not just a coach and a manager, you're a mentor, an agent. You're trying to help them find pathways, find clubs, find games, keep them going, keep their morale up, keep them as long as you can in England and in these top clubs. So there's there's a lot more to it than just turning up on international windows. But it's good. It keeps me busy, keeps me out of trouble. And listen, I work closely with Michael and I'll watch his players and stuff and that as well. But pleasing for me is that he's taken a real keen eye on what's below. He's done that before as well when he was manager at the previous time. But it's been great to be able to lean on him as well for advice at times.
And just finally from me, Gareth, I want to ask you about your old international teammates. Jared Dallas, were all really disappointed for him that he's had to retire. He's had an amazing career. What have you been saying to him to, you know, maybe console him or give him bits of advice here and there?
Yeah, I know. Listen, speaking to Stuart there this morning, and I think the main thing out of the conversation was that he was at peace with it. He has done a lot of thinking about it, and the decision's the right thing for Stuart. He probably could have pushed on or tried or whatever, but it was the right decision that he's made. And as we all know, there's a long life after football, and you want to be able to enjoy your kids and be in the garden and do different stuff in that as well. So, you know, maybe the injury was pretty bad, pretty serious. Advice to him was, if you're bored, come with me, come in with my lads and do stuff. I know he's jumping on his coaching badges, and he'll have opportunities in the media. He'll have loads of opportunities, and find what you're comfortable with. But what I did say was, don't leave it too long, because you can get used to it, and then getting going again, getting started again is difficult. But listen, he's a big loss to football in Northern Ireland, and he had loads of years left in him, and you know, I seen him as the next captain really after Davo and that. But he was a big character and a big miss. And but listen, we all wish him the best in the future, and I'm sure he'll crop up somewhere.
And to round off our chat, I was really glad to have a bit of time to chat to Stuart Dallas. He is an ambassador for this tournament. He's going to be over here for some of the games, and before we got in to the competition itself, I wanted to pass on your sentiments, because when I put a little tribute online after he announced his retirement, I was inundated to a point I just couldn't believe it, how many messages I was sent, and I can't even imagine how many messages he has been sent and how many messages are just out there online for him under lots of comment sections and different pages and different places of different news outlets. It has been wild. And I wanted to try and understand, has he been online? Has he read them? And what it means to him to have such an outpouring of love and support at this time?
I'm not somebody who spends a lot of time on social media, if I'm being honest, but I have done over the past week. And, you know, to see the messages of support that I've got is incredible. And the joke to my wife about him, you know, I didn't know so many people like me, or I had as big impact on so many people. But you don't realise that when you're playing, do you know what I mean? It's just now that I've retired that I can look back, and I'm really thankful for the messages that I have had, and not just now, but over the period of my career, but more so over the period that I've had the injury over the past 2 years. I've always known that the support has been there, and I've never really taken time to sit down and thank people, simply because I wanted to concentrate on my rehab, and I didn't want, because you know what social media is like, it can blow up at times, so I wanted to concentrate. But I'm really, really thankful for the messages of support that I've got, not just me, but my family as well. And it's something that'll help me going forward, because them messages of support have given me a lot of strength over the past couple of weeks, because it has been emotional and stressful at times. But anybody who's wished me well or has sent me messages, I thank you for that.
I want to ask you about this tournament in just a moment, but the man who's managing them, Gareth McCauley, said that he's offered you a bit of advice in terms of, as soon as you get bored, give him a shout, and he wants to put you to work.
Yeah, I've had a good chat with Gareth, and obviously going forward, I would love to pick his brains on how he's managed the transition, obviously from retiring until into coaching and into management. He's somebody whose career I followed quite closely because he sort of had the same journey as myself, you know, come over at a later stage through the Irish League, and you know what he's gone on to achieve in the game and at international level is incredible. So you know, I'm delighted to see him leading the team in a major tournament. You know, I know how proud he was when he represented them as a player, and you know, I can imagine the pride that he has now in leading the team until a tournament like this.
And considering you were one of the people alongside Michael O'Neill doing the draw, he's still talking to you, Gareth. He's happy enough with the opponents, do you think?
I think he is. I think, listen, there's no easy draw at this stage. So obviously the first game, I think, is Ukraine, and it's a bit, you know, unique for him because obviously he scored the goal against Ukraine and stuff. So I'm sure he'll be looking forward to that. And, you know, football has a way of throwing, you know, surprise results and stuff up. And you know, I'm not saying he'll go in there, you know, as looking to cause shocks, but he will go in with no fear, and you just never know with football. Hopefully he can get a good result in the first game, and you know, obviously there's two goes through out of the group, so I wish him well. I hope it goes well, and you know, I'll be hopefully get over to a few games to support him.
And for the young players in the squad, what would you say to them? You know, it's an international competition. How do you, I guess, keep your feet in the ground and not get carried away with all the hype that will naturally come with it?
Well, they've got a manager who knows what it takes to play at a major tournament. I know this is under-19 level, but he will have them ready. You know, he'll make sure that they prepare the right way. But my message to them would be to enjoy it, embrace it. It's a huge opportunity for them. It's a big platform. Being on home soil, it'll be incredible. I hope that the crowds come out to support them, and they'll have friends and family at it, which will be great. But listen, this platform, at the, you know, the occasion, it'll be the biggest that these players have played on till date. Some of them might never play on a bigger stage again. So, you know, don't let the opportunity pass you by, and you know, grab the bull by the horns, as they say, and go and enjoy it. And I'm sure if they do that, just come off the pitch with no regrets. And you know, I'm sure if they do that, they'll enjoy it.
And you mentioned Irish League. I just want to ask you about your old gaffer, Stephen Baxter. After 19 years leaving Crusaders, it's a remarkable time he's had there. And I don't think he's quite finished in the game yet. He's been speaking very highly of you in the last week or two. I've heard him say anytime he needed you, you'd always pick up the phone, and how appreciative he was of that. Just how appreciative are you of what he allowed you to do at Crusaders and where you've gone from there?
Yeah, listen, he gave me an opportunity in the Irish League, and for that I'll be forever thankful. I think everybody just expected them to go on forever, but you know, all good things come to an end, and you know, 19 years is an incredible time to be at one football club, and you know, having been inside the club myself, I know the journey that they've been on. I know, you know, where he's taken them from, so I'm delighted for him. I wish him all the best in his retirement. I think he still obviously has a lot to offer the game, whether it be still at Crusaders or further afield. I'm not sure what he has in place, but I also wish Dackie Cadell all the best in taking over. You know, I know Dackie, he's someone who I've kept in contact with since I left Crusaders, and again, he's somebody who knows what it takes to be successful, and you know, the club are in good hands going forward, and I'm sure Stephen will be helping them along the way and giving them tips and stuff. But it's exciting times for the club as well. You know, when one chapter ends, the next chapter begins, and you know, I wish the club all the best going forward.
And Dickie hasn't texted you saying if I give you a few more months, you don't fancy a season?
I have a message from him the other day, but he was looking a favour, so I don't think he'll be looking at me to pull the boots on. But you know, again, he's somebody who I think a lot of, and as I say, I wish him well going forward.
The Score with Michael Clark.
I would love to see those text messages that are being sent by Declan Cadell. You could only imagine, really, I think. But there we are. Great to have Stuart Dallas on the programme, and indeed great to hear from Gareth McCauley, Michael O'Neill, Andy Ryan and Sean Leppard. So thank you to them for taking the time to come on. Thank you for taking the time to listen. And for me this weekend, I'll be at Carrick-Loughgall. That is where I will be. Looking forward to that one. Big game for Carrick Rangers as they try and nail down 7th in a European playoff place. Loughgall could go above them if they were to be victorious. And after that, I'm hurtling, after a little detour home, to the Northern Ireland Football Awards. In my capacity of chair of the Football Writers, we have a little black tie event to do as we hand out awards amongst the great and good. That should be a great night. And if you're a player or manager or somebody who's attending, I shall see you there. I hope you have a fantastic time. And if you're not there but you're listening to this, well, keep across socials and you'll find out who's won what. But for now, from me to you, all that remains to be said is enjoy your weekend of sports. Bye bye.